This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
That last point I wanted to mention here. Okay, human perception is unreliable. Trained observers are not really trained. We can't believe what people tell us. And of course, we have these instances where in law school or something, they stage some incident without warning before the students. They come up with different versions of what happened. Obviously, police departments trying to get evidence for a crime will talk to different people, get different versions. We understand that. We understand the problems with human perception, and something unexpected seen for a brief period, you're not going to get the real story. But if they see it for a while, there are other witnesses, which is why we like multi-witness cases, then you have a closer chance of having a fairly accurate picture, don't you think, Jason?
Yeah, like you say, the more people, more witnesses that come forward. I mean, a good example is the Calvin Parker case. You know, at the time, it was Calvin Parker and Charlie Hickson who were abducted. Anyone ever meet Calvin Parker? He's such a genuine guy. You know, he's up front. You know, he doesn't want the fame and fortune that comes with what happened to him. But, you know, since then, people and more witnesses have come forward. You know, people that were on the other side of the river, the Pascagoula, Mississippi River, and reported the same thing, and also having an abduction case themselves. Philip Mantle, you know, Irina Scott in the States, you know, they're really, really good people that have done some really good research and information delving into this, you know, and come up with more witnesses who are willing to come forward now, who again at the time didn't want to come forward just because they saw what happened to Calvin and Charlie. They didn't want the same thing to happen to them. And again, time has really changed. People are waking up to what is actually going on in the world, and especially with sightings, you know, and people are prepared to come forward. So the more people that see one thing, yeah, it just cements the other parts of the case, you know, the other witnesses' statements and, you know, what they've actually said. And if it is a craft of similar description to what that one person saw and a second saw it, a third, you know, it just cements the case even more.
And by the way, we had Irina Scott on the show talking about the companion book about what happened in Pascagoula. Calvin Parker's been on twice. And we know, for example, if we look at other cases, extra evidence, we think of Socorro, New Mexico as a single witness case. But when people like Kevin Randall and others explore the case further, other people saw things that appeared to represent the same kind of craft.
Yeah. And again, you know, even down to the case that happened to me, the RAF Cosford incident in March 1993 in the UK. I was serving in the Royal Air Force then. I was present on the base. I probably said this story before. I did actually write about it in the first book. And RAF Cosford is a training camp in central UK, near Wolverhampton, Birmingham. The trainees, after they finish their basic training, go there to do their trade training. So they're going to be an armourer or communications or some sort of discipline like that. And part of their duties is obviously gate guarding, you know, guard duty. A friend of mine was in the guard room that night as the orderly corporal. There was a young airman on the airfield guard post, and the radio all of a sudden came in loud and clear, and it was this young airman screaming down the radio to get the guard commander out to the airfield because something was hovering over the airfield. So upon hearing this and hearing that the airman was in such distress, the guard commander and the RAF police and, you know, other personnel got in their Land Rovers, etc., and drove out to the airfield. When they all got there, they all witnessed this huge triangular-shaped craft hovering over the airfield. And it was described at the time by the personnel that it was the size of a battleship. It was huge in size, dark, but it was your typical triangular shaped craft that was seen. It was seen throughout the UK that evening by on duty policemen and members of the public, etc. And then it took off at high velocity, and then it went on to another nearby RAF base, RAF Shorebury, where the on-duty air traffic controller got radar lock on this thing coming in. And it was of similar description to one that had just been seen at Cosford. And it was firing very thin wafer, thin lasers down towards the ground, very similar to the Japanese case we spoke about earlier, you know, firing very thin wafer beams down towards the ground. And the air traffic controller got the impression that this craft or object was looking for something, and then it took off again at high velocity. But it's all there on the internet if anyone wants to read up on it. A few years back, the British military MOD released the official papers, the reports done by the policemen, etc. So it's all there. But as we were saying, as I got into that case, I'm trying to explain is that people saw it from all over the place, you know, all members of the public and on-duty policemen, different military bases, and it, again, they all saw the same thing. And it was all that time in the 90s, you know, where the Belgium UFO flap with the Belgium Air Force actually put the footage on the TV for everyone to see. So we're talking about the 90s for the triangular-shaped craft of that time. So the more people that saw this object, the more people reported it and confirmed, so, you know, cemented the case even more, dates, etc., locations, and it's all, you know, for the good of the case.
Yeah, it's one of those cases where the object seems to be attracted to military bases and is really making no effort to conceal itself. You know, it just goes flying around for everybody to see.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, one opinion that I have got from the case, obviously I've thought about it over the years and, you know, thinking, is it extraterrestrial? Is it a secret covert military aircraft that we didn't know about? But RAF Cosford isn't just a training base. It is actually a large museum for the Air Force. And on the museum, there is actually every type of aircraft you can think of that the RAF have had, and it's generally the first aircraft of each time, so the first subsonic, the first Harrier jump jet, you know, those sort of things. So I've thought maybe if it is extraterrestrial in origin, were they actually there to observe and look at the, you know, the old aircraft? It's just an opinion of mine, you know, but again, it's changed so much over the years, because again, you know, the first time I saw the stealth aircraft, the F-17 stealth aircraft, was when I was in the first Gulf War. So I'd never seen it before then. And again, to me, that was a triangular-shaped craft. It was unusual. It was nothing like we'd had. You know, it was kept really secret until then. So my opinion has changed over the years of Cosford. What the actual aircraft or the intention of the person, you know, people on board, or was it a remote? Was it a, you know, like a drone type of huge craft? I really don't know.
I'd like to get into some more cases here, case histories, and of course, he'll want you to buy the book to learn more. But you refer to here a well-known Japanese UFO investigator and his favorite case. Maybe we'll pick up in the next segment what it's pronounced Kiyoshi Amamiya.
Yeah, I'll let you say it because I have just as much trouble as you.
Kiyoshi Amamiya. The reason I can do this at all is we have a really nice cashier at a local restaurant named Yuki.
Okay.
And he's just a really terrific guy and always gets our orders right and gives us extras and stuff. So I'm learning a little bit of Japanese. Anyway, we'll have that with Jason, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices start at just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Barada. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest-rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Hi, I'm Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy. There's no reason why you shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there. And I'm going to give you a free copy of my lecture that tells you exactly how to do it. In fact, after you've lived a long and healthy life, there should be only two documents in your medical chart, a birth certificate and a death certificate. I'm Dr. Wallach with a warning. If you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol, high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, and other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. My free lecture is going to reveal what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. It's all in my free lecture called Deadly Recipe. So call toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. Again, that's toll-free 1-855-79-YOUNG. 1-855-79-YOUNG.
What if you could cut your heating bills this winter with your existing wood-burning fireplace and not spend thousands doing it? You can with Great Wall of Fire Fireplace Grates. Our U.S.-patented, made-in-America Wall of Fire Grates increase fireplace efficiency, eliminate fireplace smoke problems, and come with a 30-day money-back guarantee. See our grates in action and get free shipping from wallofire.com or call 800-274-7364. Fireplace heat without fireplace smoke. Wallofire.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Okay, what is Kiyoshi's favorite sighting?
It was a case that he had. He saw himself again, and one of his first, that he came across a black sphere you know, they saw over, I think it was Tenri City in Japan. And he's a great, you know, ufologist. You know, the cases I've seen from him that he's sent to me to analyze, I've never ever seen before. You know, you don't get an awful lot of cases coming from that region of the world. And again, it was where it was basically videoed this unusual dark sphere. Not looking like, again, any conventional type of aircraft. It was actually videoed by him, yeah, again. Through the video I've actually taken in the book, you can actually see the actual results of the enlarged and enhanced views of the craft that I did. And, you know, this thing has got structure to it. You know, you go into real depth using the filters and you can see it's got, you know, depth. It's got an aura around it, the craft. Again, there is no conventional wings or propellers or rotors like a conventional aircraft. And this thing was moving across the sky. But again, with his report going into it, he's got actual drawings done by other witnesses and where he videoed it and when he rang the different authorities and people to report it. And then again, it doesn't, you know, he actually cross-references it to another sighting of another similar object within the same region of sky, again taken with two different video cameras, etc. And again, when I actually analyzed the two separate pieces of footage, as you can see in the book, you can see the object is pretty much the same shape, size, everything, you know, in comparison. So, again, a very interesting case he's put forward. It's a case you've not heard about before, and it's obviously stuck with him as well.
Those couldn't have been easy photos to analyze. I mean, it's just like a black dot in the sky.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're not the easiest, as in you get the footage itself. Again, everything was sent via email, of course, because he's in Japan and I'm in the UK, but I took frames from the image, the footage he sent me, and actually took frames from that piece, you know, the original source footage, and they're the best I can get from it, because again, no one's ever done that before. And when you get in there, but like you said, there's so many cross references of other witnesses, etc., to the same object scene, and again, they couldn't explain, you know, again, so it's really unidentified because we can't identify it.
I recall receiving an English language Japanese UFO publication back in the 60s. It was amazing, the cases. Does this gentleman speak English well enough to get him on the show?
I think if I have trouble, I think I've used an awful lot of translations, but I mean, you could get in contact with him and he might possibly, it'd be good if you do, because the cases that he has actually, you know, sent and the things that I've seen, I've never seen before. So again, within ufology, it's another aspect, it's another avenue you can go down. There's certainly another region of the world, you know, where UFO hotspots, etc.
It is certainly something we'd like to do. We've explored Australia, UK, Scandinavian countries, Brazil, of course. But it would really be nice to go to an Asian country and get some response and see what goes on there and see how it compares with the sightings we have here. Now, you have a chapter featuring Don Schmidt, but it's not about Roswell. Tell me more.
No, well, again, obviously, everyone associates Don with Roswell, etc., because, you know, the depth that he's gone into and everybody knows of Roswell. This really goes into his depth of coming into ufology was really, you know, going to bookshops, etc., the news and how conspiracies and everything can get your interest, you know, grab. He talks about the assassination of Kennedy and being at school and then wheeling a large television into the classroom and everyone sat there watching it, you know. And again, he just goes back to the power of TV and things. And then the books that, you know, he'd been out with relatives and calling at bookshops and picking up, you know, famous books. Most of us have read, you know, likes of Chariots of the Gods by Eric Van Daniken and, you know, and again, it's just part of our journey. You know, you read one piece of literature and you get another piece. Just like with videos and YouTube videos, people want to watch stuff on UFOs and they can't get enough of it. You know, and I always laugh. I call it the Richard Dreyfuss syndrome. You know, the character of Close Encounters, where he has the sighting in the movie and, you know, and then after that, he's just obsessed with trying to find out information and everything else in relation to UFOs. So, the same thing with Don. Everything really goes down to the Roswell when you're talking about Don and things like that. But, no, it's old books, old leaflets, old UFO associations, you know, clubs, etc., you know, MUFON, that, you know, going back to the early days of ufology, we have MUFON and things like that now, but really, it's a different aspect again, but that's what Don wanted to put forward. It wasn't necessarily an experience, or even though it was an experience because his journey was the literature, etc., you know, in that respect, it wasn't necessarily a personal UFO case.
Fast question here before we go on. How did you pick the people to participate in this book?
Well, like I said, over the years, you know, coming into ufology in more depth, I've just worked with an awful lot of people. I mean, everybody in the book I've obviously worked with and either we analyze some sort of image or footage or some sort of case, you know, done something for them. You know, I've done an awful lot of book covers for people as well. You know, I do things, anything to do with the illustration side. So if they want to, illustrations to go with the UFO case, I'll do that for them. It wasn't necessarily just me. I just reached out to virtually everybody I could within reason, said, I'm doing this book. You know, would you like to be involved? You know, can you offer me how you got into ufology? That I really want to get it in there so the readers can actually see a different side to ufology. You know, people get into this subject through sightings and, you know, like everybody else, really. And the order that people got back to me with the case, then that was the order that they went into the book. It wrote itself, if you know what I mean. I didn't put people in a certain order. It was just how they got back to me. So, you know, like Don got back to me and Philip got back to me, then they would be the next person in the book, the next chapter. And eventually it got so big, I had to sort of stop the book, if you know what I mean, because people, I could put an awful lot in there. Maybe I'd have to do another one.
So maybe a volume two.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm wanting to get into another case here that seemed interesting. And obviously, anything related to Scotland, my pronunciation is going to be off. It's Dechmont Woods?
Yes, that's the Malcolm Robinson case.
Dechmont Woods and More with Gene and Tim and Jason. You're in
the podcast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
USA Radio News.
Detroit radio news anchor Jim Matthews was killed in a murder and attempted suicide. His girlfriend and two children were also hurt in the attack at his Chesterfield Township home. The suspect was found in the basement with wounds and an overdose. Tropical Storm Ian, which is expected to hit Florida as a hurricane, has prompted a state of emergency for 24 counties in Florida and another delay for NASA's new moon rocket launch. Canadian Armed Forces are looking at where help is needed most in Nova Scotia after post-tropical cyclone Fiona made landfall there on Saturday. The vast majority of Atlantic Canada without power, some are without homes after they were washed into the sea. A federal judge in Alabama wants the records and medical supplies associated with the lethal injection attempt of Alan Miller preserved. State prison officials acknowledged there were multiple attempts to access his vein before they called off the execution. This is USA Radio News.
In the 1800s, there were 160 spas set up in Europe to dispense fresh liquid whey. The sick would recover their health and the aged would become rejuvenated. There's only one whey protein powder on the market that can generate and surpass the results seen in the whey spas in Europe. But first, let me tell you the story of 90-year-old Mary, who was semi-bedridden and in hospice care. Mary had been consuming only a pea protein and pasteurized milk drink. Then Mary was put on to Green Meadow whey mixed with raw milk. She was given 2 to 3 whey drinks per day. On the very first day, Mary was up and came into the kitchen and made chicken soup. She was on her feet for many hours. 3 days later, Mary had gained 2.5 pounds of healthy weight. Green Meadow Whey is health giving to both young and old. Green Meadow Whey is guaranteed to make you feel better, stronger, reduce your inflammation, and eliminate virtually all toxins from your body without feeling sick. To order, go to bestwayprotein.net. That's bestwayprotein.net. Or call 888-988-3325. That's 888-988-3325.
I spend a lot of time in the garage, but even more time in the rain, sleet, and mud. In 95, I helped tow your moving trailer. In 05, I helped you get out of a ditch. Yeah, I know I'm a bit rusty, and sadly in 09, it was sparks from me, your handy chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Sparks from dragging chains can start a wildfire. Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
Only you can prevent wildfires.
Hi, this is Bryce Abel. I'm the producer of Dark Skies, the co-author of AD After Disclosure, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So we go back through time, our time machine, not the quantum leap time machine, you know, but our time machine. We go back to Dechmont Woods, 1979, Jason Gleaves, tell us more.
Yeah, well, this case was, again, we've got a fantastic researcher, Scottish researcher, Malcolm Robinson, here in the UK. Again, I asked Malcolm, how did you get into ufology? And he actually talks about this case a lot because, obviously, it means an awful lot to him. It was one of the first cases he actually got involved with, and it was the Dechmont Woods UFO case, and it was in 1979 November in Livingston, central Scotland, and it was a forestry worker, a 61-year-old guy called Robert Taylor, and he'd been there, he worked in this woods, he knew the woods very well, and he was walking his dog, he did every day in the woods, and he'd come through an opening in the woods, and he came across this spherical, unusual-looking shaped craft, with sort of flanges around the middle of it, around the spherical circumference of this craft. Very unusual looking. Again, the unusual thing about this case is that Robert was actually attacked by this UFO. I say attacked because two smaller ball-shaped, like limpet mines, that's the only way they sort of really explain what they look like, you know, the old World War II limpet mines, came from underneath this craft and along the ground towards Robert Taylor and his dog and actually attacked him, you know, went over. And if anyone is lucky enough to hear this case from Malcolm, and he talks about it, he's still got the actual trousers that Robert Taylor wore that on that day when he was attacked. And he actually takes them to the, you know, his talk, and he hands them around for people to actually have a look at them. And you can see there's gashes in the trouser legs and things like that. So, you know, it's obviously evidence again, you know, physical evidence. He went out day after the sighting had happened, and again in the ground he's got photographic proof of, you know, marks, gouges within the ground that these limpet mine sort of things attacked him. But one really important thing about this, you know, is the sounds. Obviously it was giving off these sucking, popping sounds and left the indentations on the ground, which again is the evidence. But like I said, one of the real important things about this case was that it's the only case in the police reports in the UK of somebody actually being attacked by a UFO. So it was actually raised as an assault charge sort of thing, you know, and an investigation. So, again, this case was obviously the one that stood out in Malcolm's mind, and I'm not surprised it did because, again, you know, he talks about it an awful lot, and it was one of his first cases.
Yeah, this is one of my favorite cases, just because the witness was held in such high regard beforehand in his community, and you know, despite him coming forward and reporting this, you know, to the police, you know, everybody stood up and stood behind him and believed what had happened to him rather than drumming him out of the community.
Yeah, definitely. You know, he was certainly a respected member of the community, you know, highly looked up to in the job that he did, you know, a forestry worker. You know, he was a respected person. So when he actually come forward, you know, people didn't think he was lying about it. You know, they actually believed what happened to him. And again, the evidence, you know, in this case stands up for itself because of the, you know, the indentation marks within the ground, the evidence, the police report. The police took it serious, but the report that actually came forward. And again, the trousers worn by Robert Taylor at the time during the, you know, the attack. And, you know, I've actually held them myself in my hand and had a good look. And, you know, the marks and the, you know, the cuts within the legs, you know, they're very unusual.
What about yourself, though? I mean, you know, with all the cases that you have in this book, besides your own, of course, which one, or if you have several, are your favorites?
Again, I've got plenty of them. They're all, you know, superior in their own way. Obviously,
I know you love them all, but
if I have to, you know, say a couple of them. Obviously, I like the Mike Heston Rogers. You know, he was the member of the logging team, Travis Walton. And again, with Mike, I wanted to know, you know, what got him into ufology. Was it the Travis case? You know, you were involved in it. You were driving the, you know, the seven members of the team in the logging truck and everything else. And when I spoke to Mike, he said, no, surely you want to speak to Travis. You know, you want his. And I said, well, no, we all know what happened to Travis. You know, I want your account, you know, how you got into it. And, you know, you were there. You saw the craft. You saw Travis being, you know, picked up and zapped, etc. You drove off. You went back and you were, you know, involved within it. You know, so that was one case that really, because Mike goes into great detail of the air, was the smell, the look of the craft looked like a new sports car. You know, that was like the impression he got. And it was hovering over the pine trees. It was highly polished in appearance, had a soft glow to it. You know, and the high-pitched oscillating sounds that you could hear. You know, things that you wouldn't expect people to talk about, you know, when you talk about the Travis case. Because, again, other people saw this craft. It wasn't just, obviously, what happened to Travis. Another case, I suppose, I could talk about that, you know, I really do like is a UK researcher, David Caton. He's ex-Air Force Aerospace, just like myself. you know, highly respected researcher, ufologist here in the UK. And the case he brought forward was a case during when he was serving at RAF Cyprus. And this was during August of 1958. So we're going, you know, way back. And it was a radar unit they were working on in the Troodos Mountains, which is in the mountain range at Cyprus. And I remember he was working with a guy called Barry Porter. And it was like 6 a.m. in the morning, and they actually tracked an unknown object that was actually traveling initially at 800 miles an hour off the Egyptian coast, about 38,000 feet. And they scrambled Hawker Hunter aircraft, which were the prize aircraft of the Royal Air Force at the time, to try and intercept this unknown object in, you know, in a vain attempt, because we're talking about the Cold War time, you know, so, you know, everything was heightened at that time. And they actually tracked this object going from 38,000 feet to 60,000 feet in a second, you know, and in duration, and it was traveling at speeds that they actually, you know, recorded it at 18,000 miles an hour, which then it went on to the Turkish coast. But, you know, this is the original Tic Tac sighting that I've never even heard about. And again, this was until David actually, you know, meant me and put it in the case of the book. But we're all thinking about the recent Tic Tac, you know, the Nimitz, and, you know, the US government have released that footage. You know, and this is going back into 1958. This is, you know, way back, well ahead of, you know, the Nimitz Tic Tac UFO. And again, you know, a craft going from 38,000 feet to 60,000 feet within a second. There's nothing that we had at the time, you know, even to this day, we've still got nothing known that can actually travel at those high velocities, and especially the speed at 18,000 miles an hour.
Well, it'd be a fun way to go to the moon, just think, if we can go at really, really high speeds. And if some other country, especially one that's not too friendly towards the U.S. and the U.K., had some kind of craft like that under development, they would not be keeping it a secret. They'd use it to gain advantage. Jason, Gene, and Tim, you're in.
The Podcast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids, Rockoids.com.
Hey trader, listen up. The markets have changed. Have you changed your trading strategies? Vantage Point can help you conquer volatility. Learn to trade with artificial intelligence. Text the word money to 813-813 and discover how to predict stock market trends 1 to 3 days in advance with up to 87.4% proven accuracy. No matter which way the market moves, Vantage Point's patented AI can give you a massive edge. Text money to 813-813 to get what you need to stay ahead of markets and find your best entries and exits. Text the word money to 813-813.
Trading involves financial risk and is not suitable for all investors. Past results do not guarantee future performance. By texting, you agree to the terms available at VantagePointSoftware.com/terms and consent to receive calls and texts using automated technology about offers or info by or on behalf of VantagePoint. Your consent is not a condition to purchase and can be revoked at any time. Message and data rates may apply.
Text money to 813-813.
Radio? Why should I advertise on radio? There's nothing to look at, no pictures.
Listen, you can do things on radio you couldn't possibly do on TV.
That'll be the day.
All right, watch this. Okay, people, and now when I give you the cue, I want the 700-foot mountain of whipped cream to roll into Lake Michigan, which has been drained and filled with hot chocolate. Then the Royal Canadian Air Force will fly overhead towing a 10-ton maraschino cherry, which will be dropped into the whipped cream for the cheering of 25,000 extras. All right, cue the mountain. Okay, 25,000 cheering next drive.
Now, you want to try that on television?
Well...
You see, radio is a very special medium because it stretches the imagination.
Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.
This is me, the Merciless. You are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio, exactly according to my plan.
I won't comment on that voice. Jason Gleaves joining us. We're here to talk about UFO encounters up close and personal, where a bunch of cases from people prominent in the UFO field are assembled by Jason. And one caught my eye because the guy's been on the show and he's a well-known scientist, Dr. Bruce Maccabee. And he provided here a paper that had never been published before, Jason.
Yes, yeah. Bruce Maccabee is a person I personally looked up to myself for many years. You know, I've read a lot of his stuff, a lot of his work, his material. And again, Bruce, you know, I've spoken to him a lot. Again, I've sent images to him that I've analyzed and tried to, you know, go over old cases as well. You know, and just basically do the same sort of things that he's been doing for a long time. And I've sort of passed the baton on and carried on doing that. But, I was very, very lucky for Bruce to actually give me, because I wanted to know how Bruce got into ufology just like ever all the rest. So, and he actually wrote a paper, a scientific paper on why a scientist would actually research ufology. And this was his first ever paper that he wrote, and it's never been published before, and he's actually given me permission to put it in the book. And it's a fascinating read, you know, it goes into real depth of, you know, why scientists and cases and things like that, why they would actually get into ufology. And, like I said, it's somebody I've looked up to for a long time.
I think, one of the cases that you have in your book that fascinates me, and I have to admit, I've never run across this one before, was the Chinese Roswell.
Yeah, that was Mary Rodwell. And again, you know, I'm sure many of your listeners know of Mary, you know, founder of a CERN, and she carried out an awful lot of regression sessions on people, you know, within ufology, and fantastic work she does. But again, I've got to know Mary quite well, and that was through Peter Slattery via Australia, ESETI. I've done an awful lot of work for Peter over the years and still do it with, you know, himself and James Gilliland at the Seti Ranch near Mount Adams. If you go onto their web pages, you'll see anything that I've actually analysed for them, craft and beings and stuff like that. And recently we've done a documentary, which I think is on Amazon and iTunes, etc., called Multidimensional. And again, that was with Peter Slattery and Mary Rodwell and James Gilliland. And, you know, it goes in really the sightings and experiences of Peter in Australia. But with Mary, again, I wanted to know how she got into it, because you don't actually know what was, you know, what was the sort of thing that gets this sort of a person into ufology. And she talks about the Chinese Roswell. And again, you just assume it's the New Mexico Roswell, etc., you know, going down that road. But she goes
Hold on a second. Chinese Roswell. Okay, I'm curious.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, she actually talks about a case that I've never heard about, you know, the Chinese Roswell experience, sighting, etc. You know, we all assume it's the New Mexico Roswell case that everyone talks about. And this was in through researchers in Beijing in China who actually, you know, had dealings with Mary. And it was basically a downed UFO crash in Datong in 1997 on a military base. And basically, they heard a loud bang. Military personnel one evening, late evening, and they thought it was actually a thunderstorm and a tree coming down, because they heard a loud bang. And when they went outside, there was a downed disc-shaped craft within the barracks themselves, with aliens, ETs, you know, on board and lying outside the craft. And again, they were, you know, the aliens tried to communicate with the soldiers, and this was obviously covered up by the Chinese government, etc., and they probably engineered the craft itself. But, you know, Mary goes into great depth again with this case, because again, everybody, when you actually mention it to people about, you know, what had happened in China, you know, you just don't assume that is anything to do with the, you know, New Mexico incident. Is very similar to what happened in New Mexico, but not quite the same.
I think the parts of that story that really sell it for me is the very human response that these soldiers had with these creatures outside of this crashed case. And, I think that somebody who is, you know, like maybe trying to fudge the information a little bit, you know, would go and say that, you know, everybody immediately mobilized and, you know, grabbed the creatures and rushed them out so nobody else could see them. No, it was just the opposite. Everybody who was involved tended to want to pass it along to the next person who could be higher up. They didn't want to get involved in the situation.
Yeah, you know, again, you know, it's how would you react to it yourself? You know, that's really what you got to look at. You know, if an object of some sort of description that you don't know what it is, you know, crashes and obviously unusual looking being on the ground, would you go up to it or would you run the other way? You know, and again, you know, people, is it the fight or flight sort of syndrome? Do they actually, you know, attend to the beings, or do they just run the other way?
Well, the other aspect is the physical description of these creatures, which is pretty unique, was that they were described as, face-wise at least, as looking like mice, not so much that they had like a, you know, like pointed nose and all that, but that they were covered in like a fur.
Yeah, they, you know, they look sort of ferret-looking appearance, you know, the face, the facial features. Again, great descriptions in the book, an awful lot of detail Mary comes out with, and especially from the researchers. in, you know, in from Beijing in China, who Mary had dealings with, you know, and went through the whole thing. You know, the detail of the, they're not the usual looking type of beings that you would expect, like reported at the New Mexico Roswell. You know, the greys with the long black elongated eyes. You know, the, these were an unusual ferret looking, you know, features that they had.
Which makes you wonder if that was a case that happened in the United States. Would it get basically buried because the reported creatures from this craft did not follow the same description as everybody seems to be used to in pop culture with UFOs? Like you said, gray, big head, you know, big eyes. But since this was coming from a country that is probably not as familiar with the, you know, alien pop culture scenarios as here in the West, you get something different, and, you know, it's taken down and recorded as it is without any attempts to either change it or say, well, since this wasn't, since these creatures weren't reported as looking like greys, we're just going to ignore it.
Yeah, you know, and that's the beauty of this case is, you know, it hasn't been changed, it hasn't, you know, been manipulated, you know, for people to say that, oh, surely you didn't see that type of being, you're mistaking it for a grey with the long elongated eyes and large head and, you know, everything features or, you know, bodily features that we understand or, you know, people report an awful lot of. They kept to the facts of what they reported. Again, they reported the craft, the interactions and everything else related, you know, even down to assuming it was a tree that was falling outside. They didn't even think that it was, you know, a downed UFO, only when they went outside and encountered it firsthand. So yeah, that's what makes it stand out, I think, as in a real gem of a case, because, again, it's something else that hasn't been manipulated, hasn't been changed over the years to suit somebody else's agenda.
Anyway, let's just break it here. More to come with Jason, Gene, and Tim. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Classic science fiction at its best. Available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
Have you heard the warning from the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll-free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the Dead Doctors Don't Lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.